There's nothing a federal government loves doing more than anything is declaring war on stuff. It's awesome to declare war on stuff. People think you're tough and you're brave. And I think this declaration of war, which Ted Lefroy brings us, it's not had the attention it deserves. And it's probably going to be a winner policy-wise because everyone loves feral cats. Ted Lefroy, good morning.
Morning, Rick.
I mean, really, feral cats. Leon Compton loves feral cats. He gets it on. You get 15 million calls about feral cats. This is a war now. A war on feral cats. You were at the announcement of this at Melbourne Zoo. Ted, how many flags did the minister have?
How many flags?
Well, you know, the Prime Minister likes to have 8, 10, 15 flags. Did they go for the flags?
No, there weren't flags, but there were lots of banners.
Okay.
Announcing the threatened species strategy.
Okay.
And I mean, it's a good thing these things are brought to attention, but the idea of this this war on cats, you know, you identify the one culprit and look for a universal strategy. And the target is to dispatch with 2 million cats in the next 5 years. That's 1,000 cats a day.
What are they going to do with them?
Well,
have they thought through the...
I don't know.
The cat fur market's going to collapse.
We used to export cat fur to Europe.
Did we?
Austria.
Yeah, did we?
Yeah, they were sorted by colour and shipped overseas. It's a long time ago.
There's a woman on King Island who makes little purses for coins out of their testicles.
Well, there was a man called John Walmsley who really started the idea of reintroducing native animals and putting up fox and cat-proof fences. He used to wear a catskin hat to make his point. And this is 20 years ago. He was on this campaign.
I had no idea we used to export cat fur. Ted Lefroy is a professor. He's director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania. And as part of this announcement, did you get to meet the cat hunters of Kuakura?
No, we didn't. But we saw them at a distance. Two wonderful women came in from the Western Desert, Nolia Ward, and they showed a little video of them hunting cats. So they have... under native title, they were granted 40,000 square kilometres as part of the Kuakura community, half the size of Tasmania, a community of 200 people.
How many councils have they got?
Well, they're part of a much bigger council.
Yes, no.
But the point was there's a thriving bilby population there because of their continuous management of that land. They not only hunt cats, but they burn that country, the spinifex and grass country, in very small, discrete patches. We were shown aerial photographs where they've been hunting and burning. The average size of a burn in the last 10 years is 4 hectares. You go a bit further north where there isn't a community managing the landscape, and the average size of a burn is 8,000 hectares. So what they're doing is doing cool burns early in the dry season that's creating this mosaic that makes it easier for them to hunt but doesn't destroy the whole landscape.
Mm.
And if you don't do that and the fuel builds up right up to the end of the dry season, you get a lightning strike, then you get these mega fires. And then all the cats from around about six-fold increase in cat population, descend on these burnt areas and hunt with impunity because there's no cover.
And this is what we saw after the fires in Tasmania. Is there were increases in the cat populations. That was reported to us as well.
I didn't know that. But they do what they found up in the north is that somehow, even from 30 kilometres away, they know when there's been a major fire and they'll hot-foot it over there, get there just in time. It's cool enough to hunt, clean up, and then go back to their territory. But the good news part of this is that where this community has been continuously occupying this land and managing it, they showed night vision photos. When they go out hunting now, they also take these motion-sensitive cameras, a little stake, bang it in, a couple of cable ties, pointed at a bilby nest. And, you know, there's a very happy population of bilbies. They haven't got rid of the cats. They're coexisting with them, but it's now part of their culture.
So what does that teach us then about this management strategy and, you know, not-for-profit organisations like yours and other people who will be implementing various aspects of this plan to kill 1,000 cats a day in Australia?
Yeah, well, I'm not part of a not-for-profit, but I admire what they do. We've now got two arms of conservation, governments and the not-for-profits. I think what it tells us is solutions are going to be local. There's not going to be a universal technological solution like a bait you can drop from a plane and knock off all the cats. It's going to depend on local knowledge and people being active. And the, you know, there's a range of things, none of them on their own, methods, none of them on their own are going to get rid of them, but they can keep them down, even using guardian dogs to guard newly introduced populations of native animals. That's being trialled at the moment. It's been used overseas.
What kind of dogs do that well?
They're called marimas. They've been used, I think, the Caucasus, parts of Eastern Europe, for hundreds of years. Charles Darwin talks about them in The Voyage of the Beagle. He saw them in South America. And that they bond with the sheep or the goats or whatever they're put with as domestic animals and protect them, and now they're starting to use them to protect small populations of wildlife.
It's 20 to 7 on 936 ABC Hobart. Professor Ted Lefroy is Director of the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania, and we're looking at this new policy. It's the war on cats that the government's announced. And at this announcement, what's the relationship like between the minister and environmental groups? Because is it a bit tense?
No, it's I think it's a bit selective. There were, I suppose, every major environmental NGO in the room, in the country, was in that room. There were 250 people there. So from the big ones that have major land holdings like Australian Wildlife Conservancy, Bush Heritage Australia, down to the Friends of the Hamilton Honey Eater, and lots of local groups who are doing conservation. And they have become a big part of the strategy. And I can understand why, because they have been very inventive. They've been very creative in the way that they manage land. They have more freedom than, say, a national park organisation in what they can and can't do. They don't have to manage visitors. Their task is very focused. And they've been doing some brilliant stuff. And I think that's the government's rightly recognised that and latched onto them.
But is there also tension between the reliability of the funding for those organisations?
Always. But a lot of them are philanthropic and they rely on their tax-free status. Their not-for-profit status, which encourages some people, quite a lot of people, I imagine, to donate to them. So it is slightly ironic that as we were meeting, there's a parliamentary select committee looking at the status of not-for-profits. And if some of them lose that status because they've been critical of government, that's then going to affect their ability to raise money and carry on their work.
And what about the Kuakara community itself? Yep. Because that's one of the communities at risk of closure, is that right?
I don't know that one's been named, but it just gives you an example, doesn't it, how difficult it is to be consistent in government. There's one policy saying we'll close remote communities because people are there purely for lifestyle reasons, and then we see a perfect example of how their lifestyle is managing the environment beautifully.
Because they're taking care of the cats.
Well, and they're burning.
And more.
They're doing a lot of things, I guess it proves the adage that every policy has unintended consequences, and some of them also have their intended consequences.
Ted Lefroy, in terms of then what's been happening in Tasmania with feral cats, what's going to work here? What are the local solutions here that are either working really well or that as a result of this policy can now be implemented?
Well, one thing we do have here is the Cat Management Act, passed in 2009. So all cats have to be neutered and chipped, and only certain people can breed them. I mean, Tasmania leading the way. Usually that's a local government thing and it's highly variable. And there's talk of it being undone in some local government areas. But here, it's statewide. And there is a statewide cat management policy being developed at the moment. There's a lot of consultation going on. But that act is a great start. But even so, you know, they think of them as three populations. There's the domestic cat that we do the right thing by. And there's the feral cat. And in between that, there are strays that are dependent on the artificial environments we've created and tips and other rich sources of food, and that is going to be always difficult. How do you get onto that one? Which is why we've got to live with them, and solutions will vary depending on where you are.